Hey, John, want to hear a joke?
Yeah.
Well, there's this nun and this priest, and they're going across the Sahara Desert on a camel. Well, they're going for a couple of days, and all of a sudden, the camel just drops dead. Well, the priest says, oh, things are looking pretty grim here, and I don't know if we're going to make it, you know, more than a day or two with this camel being dead unless somebody walks by. She says, yeah, Father, I know, and it's terrible. He says, well, I've never seen a woman's breast before. Would it be all right if I see yours? And she says, well, given the circumstances, I guess it'd be okay. And she shows him. He says, well, you mind if I touch him? She says, well, again, under the circumstances, I guess it's okay because we're not going to make it out of here alive. She says, you know, Father, I've never seen a man's penis before. Can I see yours? So he lifts up his robe and she says, can I touch it? He says, yes, under the circumstances, you can. Well, pretty soon he's sporting his huge erection and he says to her, you know, sister, if this huge erection was put in the right place, it could bring life. She thinks about it. She says, okay, well, then why don't you shove it up this camel's ass, get it back to life so we can get out of here.
You said I want to see the world, and I said, go.
The truth is, in your hesitation, I found my answer.
I think I'm lost without you.
Today's word of the day is
amalgam.
Definition: a mixture or blend.
Procrastination is a killer. It kills plans, and it kills projects, and it kills dreams. It kills ideas, and it kills progress in life. As soon as you feel that hesitation, that lag, that fear and indecision, get hyper-aggressive. Go. Do not wait. Do not take the easy way out. Do not give up based on instinct. Fight on. Make today count. Step forward. You have to initiate action. Do not pause in that moment. Fight the procrastination and get done the things you need to get done now.
Hard work is the universe's great equalizer. Hard work is the thing that has leveled the playing field and given the average Joe, the fucking underdog, a shot of the crown. If you work hard and you never give up, you can literally achieve anything. See, the problem is most people, what they're doing is they're all at this mountain called success, and they're all strolling around the fucking bottom of this mountain, and they're looking for an elevator to carry them to the top. See, they haven't realized yet that there is no fucking elevator. Stop looking for an easy way to the top. Stop looking for the shortcut, because let me tell you, there ain't one. No matter who you are, you have where you are right now and where you want to fucking be. And there's only one road or one path that takes you there, and that's hard fucking work, baby. You have everything you need to have everything you want. But you must get to work.
We all have things that beat us down and make us want to quit. And it's what you do when you get to that edge that determines what you're going to be. People do one of two things. They either A, shut down completely, or B, when you get to the edge and you get to the brink and you get to the time where you've had enough, you start to take productive action in the direction that you know you need to go. We all have a choice. And what defines who we're going to be and whether we're going to be people who regret their whole entire life, or we're going to be champions and people who set standards and become role models, comes down to what we do when we're on the brink. It's A, go be a bitch, or B, do the fucking work.
From the ABC News, I'm
Daria Albinger. There is tension rising in the Middle East as the Israel-Hamas war enters a seventh month. The Pentagon is sending more U.S. troops to the region with worries Iran could attack Israel for the recent deadly strike on its consulate in Syria. The Iron Dome intercepting a barrage of rockets fired today by Hezbollah. ABC's Britt Clennett in Israel with U.S. reaction.
President Biden was asked if he's concerned about Iran killing Americans. Biden telling reporters, "I'm always afraid of that." Officials here in Israel are promising that if Iran attacks Israel from its territory, Israel will attack inside Iran.
Israel has not claimed responsibility for the attack in Syria. Vice President Harris in Arizona, which is now ground zero in the battle over abortion rights.
Arizona's near-total abortion ban is seen as a liability for Republicans come November that Democrats are already pouncing on. Former President Trump says a legislature in Arizona needs to act immediately because a state Supreme Court went too far. Vice President Kamala Harris in Arizona on Friday vowing to protect reproductive rights.
Are you ready to make your voices heard?
Abortion rights have won in all six states where they've been on ballot since Roe v. Wade went away. Alex Stone, ABC News.
State police in Brenham, Texas say a driver intentionally slammed a stolen 18-wheeler loaded with steel bars into a Department of Public Safety building. ABC's Marcus Moore says the driver had applied for a commercial license yesterday, was denied.
Those working at government buildings across the country have already been at a heightened state of vigilance over the risk of terrorism, but officials here in Texas have given no indication that today's incident was an act of terror.
One person was killed and more than a dozen were injured. Italian fashion designer Roberto Cavalli has died. Celebrities from Madonna to Beyoncé were fans over the decades. Cavalli was 83 years old. You're listening to ABC News. Tens of thousands of people are heading to Boston for the marathon Monday, this year's event falling on the anniversary of the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing.
Each year, we build on the previous year's security operation. The plan to protect the event is rigorous and dynamic. There are multiple and redundant layers of security, some of which are visible and obvious, and many others that will not be noticed by the public.
That's Massachusetts State Police Colonel Jack Mon. Prosecutors in Michigan released recordings of phone calls that James Crumbley made from jail, the father of the Oxford High School shooter, making threats as he faced trial for involuntary manslaughter, the 2021 school shooting that left four dead and seven injured.
A chilling lack of remorse.
You know, I kind of feel like a martyr, you know what I mean?
And threats to the Oakland County prosecutor.
When I get out of here, I am on a rampage, Karen. Yes, Karen McDonald is going down, and you better be scared.
All detailed in the prosecutor's pre-sentencing report in the trial of James Crumbley, the father of the Oxford High School shooter. Those calls now made public. Crumbley's lawyer claiming that his client was just venting. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry has not yet said that he is stepping down in international council, announcing today that they are looking for his successor. Haiti's been in the grip of criminal gangs who have demanded Henry's ouster. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
The following program can be heard across platforms such as Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And with that being said, the Ace of Alone Show starts right now.
Step I've ever taken in the wrong direction helped me get to where I am today and led to monumental moments in my life that I would not have got.
Previously on Dark Side of the Ring.
If you're a wrestling fan, how could you not be a fan of Chris Benoit's work?
With a headbutt directly to the heart!
This is my favorite page because this is the love that Chris and Nancy always had.
Chris was always very much a great father, very much about his family.
He was my hero, you know? I looked up to him.
I have never, ever seen a closer friendship as I did between Chris and Eddie.
Eddie Guerrero has passed away.
My next thought was, oh my God, Chris.
I love you, Eddie.
He didn't handle it well. Let me just say it like that.
Nancy started getting really worried. She's like, I'm really worried for Chris. I just had this really bad feeling.
We have more for you now on a developing story in Fayette County, the deaths of a pro wrestler and his family.
In the immediate wake of Chris Benoit's death, the world is desperately searching for answers. What comes to light goes beyond anything anyone could imagine.
People just couldn't believe it. Couldn't fathom that something like that could happen.
It can't be real. Like, where's my nephew?
That can't have happened because the person that I knew would not do this horrific thing.
But I think this is going to be gigantic. This will affect WWE.
Well, the question is, was he on steroids at this time?
Did the blows to the head Benoit received in the wrestling ring fundamentally change his brain?
It really, really was the darkest time of my life.
Georgia. It's a laid-back community. It's more of family atmosphere. Not a whole lot of crime. It's pretty peaceful. My name is Larry Alden. I was with the Fayette County Sheriff's Office. I was a lieutenant in charge of the shift that was working the day of the Benoit incident. I had been a detective for about 15 or 20 years. I'd probably see Chris Benoit maybe once or twice a week at the gym, which was right in the middle of Fayetteville. He didn't talk a lot, and he was pretty focused on getting his workout in. I never heard anything about him. I didn't even know where he lived at until the call came out on the radio that day.
My name is Dennis Fagan. I run the security for World Wrestling, and one of our wrestlers that lives down there is missing.
And what's his name?
Chris Benoit.
Okay, and he's a wrestler?
Yes, what happened, he's a very religious gentleman, and yesterday he was supposed to show up at a pay-per-view and never got on the plane, never showed up. It's out of character for him.
All right, we'll go ahead and send somebody out there to check on him. If you want to call us back in like 45 minutes or so, if he's there, we'll tell him to give you a call.
I was in my patrol car just riding around the county, and it was pretty close to the area when the call went out. I wasn't thinking of anything other than a welfare check where maybe he was sick, maybe drunk, didn't really know what. I pulled up on scene about time the neighbor was walking over, and I walked up to them, and I asked if she had seen Mr. Benoit or anybody. And she said, it's been 3 or 4 days since I've seen anybody over there. There was 2 large canines in the yard. If I remember correctly, they were German Shepherds. We asked her if there was any place she could put the dogs at so that we could go up there and do the welfare check. And she said, oh yeah, me and the dogs get along great. I feed them whenever they're out of town. And she jumped the fence. Dogs right there with her. She walked them in there, never had to take a hold to them. It was taking a little longer than I thought it should take. But then she came running out the door, screaming that Daniel's dead, Daniel's dead. I went from just being a regular welfare check. Okay, we've got something more serious here. Crossed the fence at that time, myself and Deputy Mundy, and we made entry through the side door which she had left open. We drew our weapons, not knowing what we was going to come upon. It was daylight, and they had plenty of windows in the house, so you had a lot of light coming in. There was an odor in the house. And I looked over at Deputy Mundy and said, something is dead in here. There was a set of stairs going up to a bedroom, so we went up those steps. And sure enough, that's where the juvenile child was at, laying in bed. I noticed the child was laying on the bed face down. Deputy Mundy said, do we need to start CPR? And I said, no, he'd passed away. But we started clearing all the different rooms and doors. We found another room, and that's where we found Miss Benoit at. She was laying on the floor, and she was wrapped up in a blanket or maybe a rug or something like that. Went downstairs to the basement area, which was a couple of large open rooms. And the last door we opened was the gym door. And that's where Mr. Benoit was at. Because of the mirrors and at the angle Deputy Mundy was at to my right, she saw the reflection at the far end of the room, which might have been 5 to 7, 10 feet away from where he actually was. and she started to say, "Show me your hands, Fayette County Sheriff's Department." She could not see. He had a cable from one of his weight machines around his neck and had some weights on it. That's when I told her, I said, "He's sitting right here. He's passed away." Radio had called us, asked if everything was okay. And I told him on the radio that it looked like it might be a homicide and suicide. It was within 2 or 3 minutes of us walking back outside that somebody had already strung crime scene tape across the front of the property.
I was at the gym. And I remember I was driving home, my son was with me, and I got a call from one of the writers from WWE who called me and said, "Are you sitting down?" I'm like, "What's going on here, dude?" And that's when he said, "Chris is dead." And I said, "What? Chris who?" He says, "Chris Benoit." And I pulled over on the side of the road and I just started bawling. And I remember my son, he said, "Daddy, you cry funny." I was just crying, I was bawling.
At this time, no one knew what happened. So WWE is just thinking that Chris Benoit has passed away along with Nancy and Daniel. You're not trying to put together that, okay, did someone break in? Did carbon monoxide happen? What's going on? You just know that these two of your friends are gone and no one has answers.
Vince McMahon, the chairman of the board, couldn't go on the air and not do anything. So we went on the air and did what we thought was right.
Tonight, this arena here in Corpus Christi, Texas, was to have been filled to capacity with enthusiastic WWE fans.
We tried to honor the guy, we tried to honor his family, tried to honor his fans, but we didn't have a full story. Shame on us for that, I guess.
So tonight will be a 3-hour tribute to one of the greatest WWE superstars of all time.
We just know that Chris Benoit is no longer with us, and neither is his family. Of course I'm going to pay tribute to my friend.
And I would trust you with me, with my life, with my kids' lives. Because I know you, Chris. I know your heart.
Yeah, they called me and asked me if I wanted to be on it. And I was like, absolutely not. I remember just sitting there, like, just watching, like, dead, with a bottle of vodka, just drinking, like, you know. Because Eddie's was bad. This was worse.
Chris Benoit was not only one of the greatest wrestlers I ever saw, but he was one of the best friends I ever had in this business.
We did not know all the information. That's our fault. We were trying to serve the audience. It was a major story. It was hitting all the news sources, and we had a TV show. We wanted to update people on what the hell was going on, but we didn't have all the information. But we didn't know we didn't have all the information. We were told from the authorities, here's what happened. Oh, guess what? We were wrong. This is not what happened.
Chris was the type of guy you'd want to go to war with.
It was hard because at that time, some guys were, you know, in their speeches, you know, praising Chris.
Because Chris Benoit was my hero.
I love you, Chris.
It's interesting to me because when I watched the Raw tribute and everybody was talking about Benoit and how great a performer he was and how amazing he was, but I thought Regal's words on that night were very revealing.
Now all I'm willing to say is that Chris Benoit was undoubtedly the hardest working man in professional wrestling.
And when you talk to him afterwards, you find out he lived in the same city as Chris and knew a lot about whatever fights Nancy and him had or whatever Chris was going through at the time. And I'm not sure if a lot of people would have noticed it, but knowing what I knew about him, I started thinking, wow, this is not good.
My sister had told me to spoil myself and go to the mall and get some makeup and have some wine with lunch and go watch a movie. And I came out of the theater and I turned my phone on and I had like 22 missed calls from my parents. And my parents made sure they wouldn't tell me anything. They wanted me to be parked in my driveway and inside my house before they told me. And that's how I found out. And then when it finally sunk in, I just absolutely lost control of myself. It was very difficult. Very difficult. I had to go to the hospital and be sedated.
I was in Edmonton, and then this number kept calling. My mom's cell phone. Unknown number. Unknown number. Unknown number. And then she finally answered it. And it was the police. RCMP. So we left, rolled down to the station. She found out first. I see her crying there. She couldn't spit it out, so... The cop told me that they all passed away over the weekend. I punched them in the chest. And then me and the cop went for a walk. We talked. And that, you know, your dad loved you. They all loved you. And I thought it was a joke. I really did.
It wasn't until after the show and after the fact that all the details started coming in.
We have more for you now on a developing story in Fayette County, the deaths of a pro wrestler and his family. Fayetteville authorities say the bodies of Chris Benoit and his family were found this afternoon in their home.
Right now it's being investigated as a murder-suicide. However, until we get the crime lab reports, it's undetermined exactly what happened.
That's when all of this, you know, all of these details start coming out about it's not just him that's dead, it's Nancy, and then Daniel's dead as well. And then that's when it just started getting out of control.
The father killed his wife and son and then committed suicide. That's what's happened here. You didn't want to believe it. Can't believe it. Can't be true. But it was.
The evidence indicates that it was a particularly brutal and vicious murder. It was something that showed some sign of real rage. I'm Matthew Randazzo V, and I'm the author of Ring of Hell, the story of Chris Benoit and the fall of the pro wrestling industry. The weekend of the murders, on Friday, Chris Benoit had a barbecue out by the pool with Daniel. And then that Friday evening, it appears that there was some sort of altercation between Chris and Nancy, that Chris restrained Nancy with duct tape and then utilized a telephone cord to strangle her and then placed a Bible next to her body. There are a number of beer cans and wine bottles around that indicate Chris may have been drinking. Next morning, on Saturday, Chris, we assume, gave his son Daniel Xanax and then murdered him in his room, being suffocated by his father. A Bible was then placed next to Daniel as well. After that, Chris made a phone call and let friends know that Daniel and Nancy were both suffering from a bad stomach virus, and then he had to take them to the hospital. That night, Chris went to bed with the bodies of his wife and child in the house. On Sunday, Benoit makes a couple searches on the internet that are chilling in retrospect. One for a story in the Bible about the prophet Elijah and the resurrection of a dead boy in the Old Testament. And then a search about the quickest and most painless way of breaking one's own neck. Chris then went down to his home gym with a half-drunken bottle of wine. He went to his lat pull-down machine, he took the bar off, he wrapped a towel around his neck, and he took the metal cord from the lat pull-down machine and put it around his neck. He adjusted the weights to 240 pounds, and then he released it. So it's a very bizarre scenario, it's a very bizarre weekend, and it doesn't leave a lot of answers.
He was just a guy, you know, like my friend. Nobody expects their friend to kill their family? Like, what?
When I found out what had really happened, the shock is just, you can't even believe it. He had put his knee in her back and essentially broke her back. I couldn't fathom how cruel and how much pain she must have gone through and how horrific that must have been for her. It was just unfathomable.
If Chris did give Daniel that, you know, medication or prescription pills and suffocate him, you know, like, shame on him. Daniel was innocent in all this.
We were hearing other things come out about the circumstances of him putting the Bibles by their sides and having a knife that he had planted underneath Daniel's bed or something like that.
Still couldn't wrap my head around it. It just sounded so... like some bad horror movie.
And now I'm a part of humanizing murderer. Strange.
I mean, to think that Nancy was dead for 2 days before Chris took his life. How was that even logical for this man who loved her so much?
Later, it turned out that there was a Bible in the house, similar to the ones left by Nancy and Daniel's body, that Chris had left something akin to a suicide note. Something along the lines of, I'm preparing to leave this earth. So Chris did leave a suicide note. He did know what he was doing. He was at least enough in his right mind to understand exactly what was happening and was still considering whether he would go make a flight to go wrestle that night on international television.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
We came up on air with Vince talking and kind of letting everybody know what happened.
Last night on Monday Night Raw, the WWE presented a special tribute show recognizing the career of Chris Benoit. However, now some 26 hours later, the facts of this horrific tragedy are now apparent. Therefore, other than my comments, there will be no mention of Mr. Benoit's name tonight.
It was understood that we were not to speak of Chris, speak of Benoit, speak of anyone of that incident. And by that next week, Chris's name was erased from everything that was involved with WWE. I mean, when we did interviews, we were not to mention Chris Benoit. So that's something that was really hard for us to do, but because we all wanted our jobs, it was understood.
I know WWE has kind of like erased his history of being in the business, and I can understand and totally agree with what they did. We're not going to praise a guy who murdered his wife or son or give him any accolades for that.
I went to the funeral of Nancy and Daniel. I can't even believe how sad it was. I was the WWE representative there, just me. It was the shits. You go to a funeral and people crying and a kid being buried and a woman being married for no reason. No reason to die.
The WWE sent JR and I lost my cool with him and told him to his face that he wasn't welcome at the wake afterward. It was all a work, just fake garbage nonsense. I can see a work coming a mile away, and that's what I saw, and I knew that that was the truth.
I felt like I was the most unwanted person in the building because I was a WWE guy, and I probably loved him as much as anybody there.
Everybody was just a mess. It's shitty, and it's sad, and it's unfair because there's two people that could still be with us today. And if Chris wanted to take his life, then so be it. But to take all of them, I didn't go to Chris's funeral. I was angry. At that point, I was pretty angry at Chris, you know, for what he did.
His funeral, it was very private. We didn't tell anyone about it. That's when it all hit me right there, all at once. I was crying my eyes out.
Who in the wrestling business provided care for you and your family in the aftermath of this?
Is that a serious question? Not a single person. No one.
And did anyone from the WWE ever reach out to you and your family?
Chris Jericho and Chavo Guerrero. That's it. Nobody else. You know? Screw them. They weren't there for me. You know? They backed off. Like I didn't even exist. It was so hard after the funeral because the media was just nonstop, 24/7.
Tonight we are talking about the strange and very sad case of Chris Benoit.
I didn't even watch news anymore. I didn't even watch TV for months. I couldn't even watch wrestling anymore.
We're also told by the police here that there were instruments of death found, not instruments of murder. There's going to be an autopsy report, but there's an awful lot of confusion about how this happened.
It really, really was the darkest time of my life.
Benoit had an intense onstage persona. He was nicknamed the Rabid Wolverine, the Canadian Crippler. The couple actually met when her former husband drew up a script that had put the two of them in a relationship.
It made everything extremely difficult. It made everything under a magnifying glass because CNN and Fox and all the news channels were at the gates. You know, a double murder-suicide with a 7-year-old kid is news. But I think that there's a point where you really just need to let the family grieve. All I really wanted to do was to be with my niece and nephew.
The mainstream media's reaction was typical because, A, they love a tragedy, and it gives them another reason to take a shot at wrestling. It was a field day for them.
Professional wrestlers are 20 times more likely to die before age 45 than professional football players.
I think a lot of mainstream media looks down on wrestling as it is, and that suddenly it was public enemy number one.
Chris Benoit's diary is revealing new information about his state of mind. The wrestler wrote a series of letters to his best friend. At one point, Benoit wrote, "I'll be with you soon."
Mike Benoit believes it's the diary of his son going mad.
We just didn't understand this was going on at that time in Chris's life.
I got a call from Chris's dad, Mike Benoit. He knew my relationship with Chris. The first thing he asked me was why. Which, from a father's standpoint, I can understand how upset he was. And unfortunately, and I felt bad, I didn't have any answers for him.
People need to understand that that was not him. Not the person we knew. The person I loved with all my heart, my hero.
The term that's been being thrown around everywhere is roid rage. Some say steroid abuse is rampant at the organization, and everyone just turns a blind eye to this.
The media's initial response to the Benoit tragedy was that this was a roid rage incident.
Where do steroids stand in the bizarre Benoit deaths?
Pro wrestling, when Chris Benoit entered it in the 1980s, was extremely discriminatory against people who were not 6 foot plus tall, who were not 250 pounds or more, and very, very muscular. My understanding is that Chris Benoit was using steroids from when he was in high school. In the months before the murders, Chris received a number of text messages from Nancy, in which she made it very clear she was sick and tired of his steroid abuse. Nancy definitely directly accused him of abusing steroids to the point that it led him to be an angry and violent and unhappy husband. And she said that the WWE's drug enforcement policy and testing regime was obviously nonsense. Something called the wellness program that alleged that it was testing every WWE wrestler to make sure they weren't using recreational drugs, performance-enhancing drugs, or steroids.
I think at that time, you know, instituting a wellness program like that, I think everybody was happy that finally some of these guys that needed the help were going to get help. Thought it was a great idea, anything to help talent, save guys from themselves.
After Eddie died, the WWE's drug testing was super strict. It went through the roof. Like, you couldn't even take a freaking aspirin, like a high-powered aspirin, unless you had, like, a prescription. And I'm not kidding. The drug testing is so strict that this rampant steroid use, dude, you can't. You can't go snort cocaine or smoke weed or anything.
In practice, it was seen that this initial version of the wellness program had large loopholes in it and large blind spots that allowed wrestlers to continue to use drugs at a really large scale without tripping the tests.
Speculation is running wild. Did steroids play a role, or is there another explanation? We have an exclusive interview with WWE Chairman Vince McMahon.
WWE did everything they could combat any coverage in the news media that indicated that drug abuse or steroid abuse was the cause of the homicides.
And obviously this is not an act of rage. It's an act of deliberation when you do something like this over 3 days. It's not an act of rage, be it steroid rage or roid rage, whatever it's called, or any other rage.
WWE strongly suggests that it is entirely wrong for speculators to suggest that steroids had anything to do with these senseless acts.
It's all speculation until the toxicology reports come back.
In his autopsy, Chris Benoit was shown to have enormous amounts of testosterone in his body. Testosterone is still a steroid that's banned in all major sports. It directly leads to increased muscle growth. Some folks have said he had 10 times the normal amount of testosterone in his body as a normal human.
And did Benoit pass the wellness program check leading up to the murders?
Yes, preposterously, Chris Benoit passed the wellness checks leading up to the murder, despite the irrefutable fact that he was taking enormous amounts of steroids.
Well, after it initially happened, I actually had nightmares. It was very traumatic because as a female, I tend to really get angry with him. The one person she thought was there to protect her is the one that really took her life.
There was a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors that no one knew about. I think there's a lot of volatile fights. One thing I'd always heard about Nancy, and the fact that she didn't take shit. So I just know there's a lot of volatility there. That's the word I think was used, volatile.
There was a few times that Nancy would call me and she would say that her and Chris were fighting. There was an instance when they were in Tampa and Chris was upset when they were driving on the way to our house, and Chris went in and busted the windshield of their car.
Did you ever witness any abuse that was going on in that relationship?
My sister called me to the house, and she called Mike Durham, known as Johnny Grunge, who was also a professional wrestler that lived in the area. And Mike said, I'll go wrangle Chris, don't do anything rash. But it was already kind of done. He hurt her. I don't know whether it was intentional or accidental, but he hurt her. Out of respect for the kids that he still has here, I won't go further into that. She got a restraining order against him. I went down there and stayed at the house. Mike had him at a hotel there in the area. Chris contacted me directly because Nancy wasn't answering any of his calls and asked me to talk to my sister on his behalf. And please, please, please let him come to the house and talk to her personally. She called him and he came over the next day and they were back together a couple of days later. So I look back on that moment and say, you probably shouldn't have gotten involved, and why did I take his call? Because maybe that would have been the end of it. Almost every day I think about that.
When police found steroids on the scene, many assume that explained it. The killer had flipped out because of drug use. Or might there be another explanation?
The initial media coverage all focused on steroid use, and I said, there's no way. I'm Chris Nowinski. I'm a former WWE superstar, and now I am a neuroscientist and run the Concussion Legacy Foundation. My wrestling career came to an end because I had a series of concussions that I didn't quite appreciate were concussions. I never stopped performing until the damage was sort of too much. So I decided I would start digging into what else was known, and it became a book. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, is a progressive degenerative brain disease that appears to be started by hits to the head.
Oh! Oh my God! Oh my God! Anything nuts? My God, what a bullball!
What I knew about CTE at that time was that there were four cases of NFL players. Two had died by suicide, and one had started hearing voices and led the police on a chased through upstate New York and died in a fiery crash going on the wrong side of the highway. When I heard about what happened with Chris Benoit, I immediately remembered a conversation I'd had with him maybe 6 months prior. I remembered that he had sat next to me in the locker room and he said, I heard you writing a book about concussions. I was like, yeah. And he goes, I'm interested in what you're learning. And he's like, how many concussions have you had, you know, before you had to retire? And I said, well, I can remember at least six, but I probably had more. And I said, how many have you had? And he said, I've had more than I can count. And then he said, I'm going to give you my phone number and I want you to call me next week. The next week I called him. It sounded like he was in the middle of an argument. He was clearly agitated. It sounded like someone else was there. He just said, hey, I can't talk right now. Can I call you back? And I said, sure. I wonder if the reason he was asking me to call him was that he knew that something was going on, but he didn't quite appreciate what that was. And so I decided that I really needed to know if Chris had CTE. There was so much media attention, I really couldn't imagine his family answering the phone. But I said, I'll give it a try. And Chris's father answered on like the second ring. He was in a state of mind you could imagine when you just lost your son and learned what happened. I told him my theory, and he immediately said, yeah, I want to see this done. We have the brain in early July, and I think within about a month, we knew that it was positive for CTE, and it was a pretty severe case of CTE. And so we held a press conference in New York.
When you look at Christopher Benoit's brain, it is in fact shocking. Our findings showed extensive areas of tau protein deposition throughout his brain. Tau protein is a marker for brain damage.
With Chris, he actually had a, what would be defined as a severe case of CTE at 40 years old, which is early to have it. So it wouldn't just be areas of his cortex or areas of his brain stem, but there was damage in areas that you would think could influence emotional behaviors. And I believe the degeneration of his brain changed who he was and what he was capable of. If you get hit in the head thousands of times, your brain essentially can start to rot. You get this damage in your brain that even after you stop getting hit in the head, will continue to spread and changes who you are and how you behave and what you become.
I think about, you know, when me and Chris would be talking and he would just be crying so much that, you know, I wonder why he couldn't control his crying. Does that go with the concussions? Does that go with his brain? You know, Eddie and Chris took a lot of chair shots. And these chair shots from like years ago were hard and they were mean.
In the 90s, we used to take chair shots to the head. That was a badge of honor. And what I mean by that is someone would swing a steel chair at your head.
Chris Jericho's helpless!
And I literally remember you would grit your teeth and you'd tense yourself and tense your neck. And just take it. They hit you on the head with it and you just take it. That was what you did. That was expected. If you had a concussion in wrestling, you just shake it off. Shake it off, go in there and do it. And all of us did it.
I wrestled for 20 plus years. It makes me wonder, how much CTE do I have? How much CTE do these other wrestlers have? Because we all got it to some extent, you know? Is this going to be my end?
So one of the most incredible things to me is you have Harley Race invents the flying headbutt and tells everyone after, don't do this move. It fucks your spine up horribly. It ruins your ability to have an old age. Dynamite Kid hears that from Harley Race, does it his whole career, ends up in a wheelchair. Dynamite Kid tells Chris Benoit. Chris Benoit does it his whole career and then loses his mind. I mean, there is a clear history of people repeating the most self-destructive story imaginable over and over again.
I think the Benoit tragedy led to some institutional changes. The awareness of what CTE is was never before even a conversation point. Now it is. And finally, unprotected chair shots and subsequent concussions are now being addressed because the one thing we've got to do is protect the athlete.
I think when you look at what Chris Benoit did as a symptom of some sort of medical problem, whether it's drug use or brain damage, I think that misses the point. Ultimately, this thing that is the core reason this happened was Chris Benoit made a decision when he was a very young person to do absolutely whatever it took to succeed at his childhood dream of becoming a pro wrestling star. No matter what happened that weekend, Chris Benoit's story was going to have a tragic end.
I think his fate was sealed the day that Eddie died, whether he knew it or not. I don't think anybody could save him after that. Not his kids, not his family, not his other friends. I just think that was the one guy that he said, I can't do it if Eddie's not with me. Whatever it was that he was going through, you know, I think he just continued to shrink his whole world until all that was left was just whatever was in his head that caused him to snap. And he fucking snapped.
It's not one thing. I think that it's a factor of alcohol and drugs and yes, possibly CTE and stress and grief. And all of those things rolled together put him on a path that weekend that he couldn't get off.
Chris is always going to be my friend and my brother. I just know that there was something going on with him that wasn't him. And it's something that, you know, I'm still very much torn with because you love Chris. You just hate what he did.
The act of what he did is unthinkable, unforgivable. But it's still hard for me to separate a friendship that I had with him, matches that I had with him, moments, times, car rides. I think I can always look at Chris as one of the best performers our business has ever seen. Just gotta leave it at that.
I get questioned all the time, does Chris Benoit deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? And I'd say, absolutely not. No. The issue is that if Chris were here, we could talk to him, he would say, putting me in the Hall of Fame is going to be one of the great distractions of the entire event. Because all it's going to do is bring up Nancy and Daniel and Chris in their last 24 hours. So therefore, I say, Chris Benoit does not belong in the WWE Hall of Fame, now or ever.
You have two guys that were the same basically their whole life and had the same reputation of being immaculate professionals, immaculate human beings, the nicest guys, and they both die very young, and one's legacy is acclaimed and one's is buried to that you almost can't say his name. If you would have told Chris, you know, when you die, your name and your body of work is going to be erased from existence forever, it would have broke his heart. Because I think, if nothing else, I remember he told me once, like, listen, the critics are the critics, but if you have the respect of your peers, then nothing else matters. So to find out that he would have lost the respect, not only of his peers, his friends, his family, I don't think he ever wanted that. It almost took down the whole business. What Chris did almost, and that's another thing, what Chris did almost destroyed the only thing that he ever loved, from a professional standpoint. The only thing he ever loved, pro wrestling, Chris Benoit almost destroyed it. That would have torn him apart as well. So it leaves us around to, like, why did he do it? And I don't think anyone's ever going to be able to answer that question.
Now people would look at me different now because of what he did. People talking shit behind my back, looking at me different, getting bullied. Screw it. I'm defending my family and what I believe in. You know, he loved them. That definitely was not him. He's still my hero. I think about him all the time. I want them to recognize Nancy, though. She definitely deserves the recognition that she doesn't get.
That's the unfortunate and the sad part about the story, is that she needs to be remembered for a strong woman pioneering in this business and her talent, and focus on that instead of what happened to her.
She's a Hall of Famer all across the board, in my opinion. She was a pioneer and one of the best at a role that doesn't exist anymore. As a pro wrestling manager, she created the role, she perfected the role, and then when she stopped doing it, the role basically disappeared. I would like nothing better than to see Nancy, Nancy Benoit. Once again, you can't even say that name, right? Woman. I would like nothing better than to see woman be put into the WWE Hall of Fame.
She was a great mom. She was a beautiful friend. And Nancy will always be the superstar that she was meant to be. In my mind.
Can I blow a kiss? Such a
wonderful. What do you remember the most about Nancy?
I remember everything about her. I remember how her hair smells. She took me in with both hands real hard, like on her both sides of the blanket, to tuck me in. Almost like she was putting a lock on me to keep me safe. And to this day, when I get sad or upset or stressed out, I will tuck myself in on the sides so that I feel more secure.
What do you remember the most about Daniel?
Everything. I closed my eyes and I could see him doing everything. He was our whole lives, all of us. He was very, 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 very loved by our family, by his siblings. He and his brother were just thick as thieves.
Did you go on to have any relationship with the Benoit family afterward?
I tried. Unsuccessfully. I was told, I won't say by who, that the children didn't want anything to do with us. And apparently the children were told that we didn't want anything to do with them because of what their dad did, which was absolutely not the truth.
My last trip with my family was for WrestleMania 23 in Detroit. And then after the match, we flew back to Atlanta, me, Nancy, and Daniel. My dad went to Mexico for a tour. And then me, Nancy, and Daniel were just hanging around the house, taking pictures, you know, out by the trees, with the dogs. And then,
split up. This is all about Bud. David is absolutely a victim. He's a great kid. That was just dealt a bad hand. I mean, it's just not fair. It's not right. He didn't do anything wrong. He's just, he's an innocent bystander in all of this.
It's good for us. It's good for us.
I felt that because Chris killed his family, that the family he left behind was automatically blackballed from the world. Like, they're going to be blamed for what Chris did. To me, those two needed to be reconnected, because talking with David and meeting Sandra and knowing she was having the same issues and pain and hurt that David had, and nobody will ever really understand what they went through with the exception of each other. So I thought if I could connect them, if they had a chance to talk, that maybe they could move on and still realize that they have family in each other.
Chris Jericho, wrestling angel, come to life. He gave my number to my nephew and gave my nephew's number to me. We hadn't talked since before everything happened.
So 13 years the last time we saw each other. It's been a very long time. She finally called me. I answered. We talked on the phone for probably a good 2 hours. And now, going to watch wrestling. Because I still love it. It's in my blood. Feels like we never were apart. Felt like we just reconnected. Left off where we started. Nothing has changed. She's still my Auntie Zaja.
Chris lives on in David every day. And Nancy lives on in Sandra every day. And I think they're both lost when Chris and Nancy died. So hopefully this will help them get found.
We feel
like,
better.
Yeah.
Feel
like, weight's been lifted off.
Because you guys have the same perspective, you know, and it's important for you guys to stick together on this, right? Because, you know, yeah, like, we can be friends and be supportive, but it's not the same as for you guys.
No, it's not the same. It's family.
Yeah, so exactly.
I've never been more grateful and happy to see someone that I love as I was when I saw my nephew.
Do you think you will ever be able to or want to give forgiveness towards Chris?
Yes, I think I do someday want to be able to forgive him. I do. Because carrying around the burden of hate gets exhausting. Everyone deserves forgiveness. And everyone deserves mercy. So I think that within time, there will be a day when I get on my knees and I finally say it, that I forgive him. You never know, it might be tomorrow, but I do know it's not today.
Sarah, Fox News. That's what authorities in Brenham, Texas are saying after an 18-wheeler rammed into a Department of Public Safety office, killing one person and injuring 13 others. Sergeant Justin Reese with the Texas Highway Patrol says the driver, Clennard Parker, is under arrest.
Parker did come to the DPS Brenham office yesterday at approximately 3 or 4 p.m., where he was denied his commercial driver license.
Brenham's a city of about 19,000 residents, about 80 miles west of Houston. Vice President Harris in Tucson, Arizona, just days after the state Supreme Court ruled a restrictive abortion law dating back more than 150 years can be upheld. She said if Donald Trump is elected, women's reproductive rights will be in jeopardy.
More bans, more suffering, and less freedom. Just like he did in Arizona, He basically wants to take America back to the 1800s.
At a news conference with House Speaker Mike Johnson this evening, Trump said he sees no need for a federal abortion ban now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. The judge overseeing Trump's hush money trial has rejected another move by Trump's legal team to delay the trial over claims of too much publicity. Jury selection set to start Monday. A federal judge in Delaware has refused to dismiss the federal gun case against Hunter Biden, a man who was on the terror watch list, allowed to enter the U.S. and remain free for nearly a year.
Mohammed Karwin from Afghanistan roamed free in the U.S. for 11 months, picked up and released twice. In March of 2023, he was not yet on the watch list, so Karwin was set free. But federal agents acknowledge Karwin is tied to Hezb Islami, a radical group said to be responsible for the deaths of 9 American civilians and soldiers in Afghanistan.
Fox's Mike Tobin in El Paso. America is listening to Fox News. Attorneys for the disgraced South Carolina attorney convicted of murdering his wife and one of his sons are appealing his conviction.
A judge denied Alec Murdoch's request for a new trial earlier this year. Now his attorneys have filed a notice to appeal that ruling. Murdoch's team says the jury's verdict was unfairly influenced by court clerk Becky Hill. And one juror told the judge that Hill did make some comments like, look at his actions and watch him closely, and that did influence her.
To me, it felt like she made it seem like he was already guilty.
Murdoch was sentenced to 2 consecutive life prison terms, but he also got another 40-year prison term in federal court for his financial crimes, the judge finding he stole nearly $11 million, mostly from his clients. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
Savannah, Georgia will now require people to lock their empty vehicles if they have a gun inside.
We're not trying to take anybody's guns. I mean, that is a constitutional right granted by the Second Amendment.
Mayor Van Johnson, who says with that right comes a responsibility to maintain and secure that right. The ordinance will also require people to report gun thefts to police within 24 hours. Another state has abortion on the ballot in November.
The Coloradans for Protecting Reproductive Freedom Coalition says it has enough signatures for a ballot measure that, if passed, would add the right to an abortion to the state's constitution. There are similar votes planned or being pushed for in several other states, including Arizona, where the state Supreme Court this week upheld the near-total abortion ban passed 160 years ago. Abortion's legal in Colorado, with no restrictions on how far along the pregnancy can be. Chris Foster, Fox News.
Italian fashion designer Roberto Cavalli, known for a flamboyant and glamorous style, has died. He became known for in the 1970s for his animal prints, which remained his signature throughout his career. Roberto Cavalli was 83. I'm Lisa Lucera. This is Fox News.
If you guys enjoyed that episode, do me a favor, leave me a 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Audible, or however many stars you think I deserve, and until next time, I'll catch your asses down the road.
Grab a clue, what could that be? They tell me that I'm never gonna make it. They want me to do something that can make sense. They hate when I keep dreaming I'll be famous.
But I don't give a fuck, I'm gonna keep chasing.
They tell me that I'm never gonna make it. Something that can make sense. They hate when I keep dreaming I'll be famous.
But I don't give a fuck, I keep chasing.
I think this life could be special if I get rid of the devils. They think that I am a rebel. I think they want me to settle. There's nobody on my left.